When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Grand Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggs.
With Mully and Haw. Biggs time.
The Biggs Report with Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Brad Biggs is the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a longtime contributor to the station and a valued friend, and like all guests, he joins us. He's brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, Aturo.com. Big Zay!
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, you know, we had a very interesting conversation today, and David pointed out that really Shane Waldron is something of kind of a criminal genius. Maybe maybe a mad scientist, can I use the term, where he wants to keep alive the possibility that they're going to run the ball, or they're going to throw the ball, or they're going to have Doug Kramer throw the ball. So he has to pretend like they do that again in order to keep alive his blocking fullback in short yardage deal. And that's why he repeated, he kind of doubled down on the idea that he'd do it again.
Boy, I'll tell you what. We've litigated the hell out of Sunday's game.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's
Molly's like, making things up there, Brad. I didn't say any of that.
You said it something that led me to that.
It gets exhausting. Like, I heard that from someone like, well, they have to say they do it again because they need to have the threat of him carrying the ball. He's close to 300 pounds. If he's coming downhill at a linebacker, it doesn't matter whether the linebacker thinks he could get the ball or not. He's probably going to be able to execute the block, but the Bears would do it all over again. And whatever they choose to do against the Cardinals this Sunday is more effective, because what they can't have happen, they can't finish unpacking their bags from the trip to Washington and discover two losses in there. They need right. to just have the one loss that they got, and they've got to get back on track. Like, there's just too much talent in the NFC North right now to create the kind of hole for yourself that's going to be really difficult to get out of. Can you imagine being there near the end and saying, well, if the Bears win the final three and so-and-so loses all of its games, they're in. Like, then you're in, like, fantasy land then, right?
I hear you, Brad, and the fatigue is obvious. We're all tired of it. But let me say this. The Bears waiting until Thursday to make their coordinators available, it prolongs the process.
That's every team in the league, Dave. I hear you. I agree completely. And it's difficult, because when good things and bad things happen in a Sunday game, it's a long wait to get there. Yeah, but that's what pretty much most team does these days in terms of their schedule.
So if you have the extra time, then why in the world would Shane Waldron, would any professional offensive coordinator then get behind the microphone and double down on one of the dumbest decisions that you could have made in real time?
I don't know. that's a great question. I don't. Maybe Mully's got the explanation that they want, and that they want future opponents to fear Doug getting the ball. But it's just it's a lot.
And it's a lot. It's a lot.
This has been a massive violation of the 24-hour rule, right?
Yeah.
Where they, you know, 24 hours after the game's over, they're moved on to the next one. No question about that. And they're not good enough to go out to Arizona without full focus on the Cardinals and get that done, right? Like, Arizona's competitive. Arizona's 4-4. Like, they're not going to just go out there and roll over the Arizona Cardinals because the Bears are in town. They need to be dialed in.
You know, you're making me try to get your pick because I want to know if they're dialed in. I think, Brad, I saw a thing from Pro Football Focus that said basically that if the Bears win the game, they are 71% likely to make the playoffs. If they lose, those percentages drop to 44. It's a huge turn of season game, right? You're coming off a really bad, I mean, awful way to lose, and now you're going on the road again. We know those records. What do you think about this just in terms of their season? How big a moment is this, and are they healthy enough to get it done?
Yeah, that last part, which we probably need to spend a little more time on, is probably the big one here, right? Is the health. I'm surprised that any model would have their playoff chances in the neighborhood of 70% with a win this week. That seems high to me. But you're bound to get a loss for either Detroit or Green Bay this week because they play each other at Lambeau Field, barring a tie, of course. So that's a positive. But that 70% seems mighty high to me. Now, the 40%, the flip side, if they lose, heck, that even seems a little inflated to me just because of what's gone on in the division so far. But a huge swing being between a win and a loss, I understand that completely, especially with this being an NFC game. And they squandered the one against an NFC opponent last week. The health's the big thing here.
Yeah.
Like, are they going to be okay up front? And what are they going to look like in terms of protecting the quarterback, Caleb Williams?
They didn't do it last week, right? And I would imagine that you're going to see the same kind of pressure on the kid that you saw really in the Houston game and last week. I think that the book is you go after them, try to defend the middle of the field. I'm sure they're going to try to do that. I just wonder, can they? And that comes back to the offensive line. And Brad, I made the point to David, I don't know if you agree with this, but I think if Sweat is able to play, that the drop-off from Sweat to the guy behind him is so vast, it's a real problem. He remains the multiplier. I don't know if the drop-off is that vast on the offensive line. I think that there is a hierarchy, but I don't know
it's
falling. You think it's more than Sweat?
I think.
Wow.
I don't know. I mean, they're both equal, but perhaps. But the offensive line is already bad. The defensive line has at least players that you can trust. I don't know. That's a good debate. What do you think, Brad?
I mean, they don't have a high tier player on the offensive line right now, like they do on the defensive line. So I think if you're just talking individual drop off, I'd say with Sweat, if that's, you know, kind of what you're trying to look at there, but. I think Sweat will go, right? He was limited yesterday.
Yeah.
The coach was optimistic about him earlier in the week. And, he's the guy that's been playing through some stuff. Remember, he had an elbow injury that cost him some time there in training camp and in preseason a little bit that I think probably lingered into the season a little bit for him. And now he's got the shin. So, you know, for good luck finding a guy that doesn't have something at this point in the season, but I think he's probably dealing with a couple things, and I would I'd be a little surprised if he's not ready to go, just based on what I've heard.
So Tyreek Stevenson probably just dealing with a bruised ego, but our guy Dan Wiederer reports that, it tweets this out, from what I understand, it will not be a surprise if Tyreek Stevenson doesn't start in Arizona. Brad, if that's the case, how big is the drop-off between Tyreek Stevenson and his replacement, whether it's Terrell Smith, is it Jalen Jones? And also, as a follow-up, how long do you think that Tyreek Stevenson would be punished if he is indeed is?
Well, I think you look at what the replacement does. If, let's assume Terrell Smith is the guy. You know, how does he play? Does he get a pick? Like, you know, that's big. It's a big opportunity for him. I wouldn't, pass defense is 11 guys. Terrell Smith in there for Tyreek Stevenson. I don't think we're really talking about a big drop-off, right? He's not going to be on an island by himself in very many occasions. So, he's a guy they trust and they've liked. I'd be curious to see, what he does with his opportunity, assuming he gets one on Sunday.
Who did you pick?
This is tough because of the offensive line. Like, what's it going to look like? Do they keep Matt Pryor at right guard? Because what have we heard him talk about a little bit is the pocket being firm, right?
Yeah.
And then the idea that if you need a replacement for Braxton Jones, then you've got multiple moving parts, right, to fill one spot. So maybe Pryor stays at right guard and Borum's in at left tackle. Is there an outside chance they activate Ryan Bates before this game? That would be something. They do have an open 53-man spot that'll be filled before the game, I assume by Borum, but this was difficult for me to pick because I think coming off a loss like they had last week, that there will be renewed or heightened focus. The kind of thing that if you're the Cardinals, you really don't want the Bears going through a game like that because you know that they're going to really be on top of stuff this week. And so from that standpoint, them being dialed in, I'm like, okay, well, I feel decent picking the Bears this week. But uncertainty about the offensive line, the realization that this team has found just about every way imaginable to lose road games, it has been a struggle for me. But I think if you just go through an exercise of stacking the rosters up against each other, I think the Bears have a better team. They ought to be half desperate. So I pick the Bears to win 20-17. Low level of faith in this selection, guys.
They had a better roster than the Washington Commanders too, right?
Yeah, I would say so. And they had a 3-point loss.
Yeah.
Like, just because you have a better roster doesn't mean that's why they play the games. And through three quarters, they had no business winning that game in Washington, which that's the thing that's been just consistently lost in the litigation is that Caleb was not good for three quarters. And you can talk about pressure and the offensive line. Like, he flat out really missed some throws, okay?
Right.
But when the game was on the line, he showed some moxie. He made some plays over and over again and put them in position to win the game. That, again, through 45 minutes of football, they had no business winning that football game. And that's the real shame of it, that had they pulled that game out, maybe some of the corners that Cole Kmet alluded to being, trimmed here and there, maybe they're still doing that stuff. So in a crazy way, maybe it helped them out. Like, that you can continue to overlook certain things if you are winning. In the fallout from a loss, there's no more overlooking some of these things.
Why can't they win on the road?
I don't know. Like the last road Sunday win was in Seattle when Nick Foles was their quarterback.
2021, December 26th.
Yeah, that's a road win on a Seattle with Nick Foles at quarterback for the
Boxing Day.
It's Boxing Day. Yeah.
Boxing Day.
That was a long time ago.
I know. And it's really difficult to do anything in the NFL if you're struggling to win on Sundays.
So, Brad, right? I know I don't want to raise your ire by bringing this play up again, but do you think that on third and goal, short yardage situations in the red zone, that you'll see Doug Kramer line up at fullback at any point on Sunday?
I mean, if we're talking third and less than a yard, why not? Like, look at their success rate with that play this season prior to the fumbled handoff. Like, why wouldn't you? It's worked. It's not like the previous times it worked, those teams were like, oh, hey, we really got to worry about the dive here. They watch the fullback, like, why wouldn't you?
This segment with Brad Biggs is sponsored by Estwing Professional Tools, made in the USA for 100 years, estwing.com. I am curious, Brad, when you think about Caleb Williams and playing in Washington, and, it didn't mean anything to him, but he was sailing some balls early. I'm not saying he was nervous or excited or whatever, but how do you expect him to play on the road in Arizona? It's Pac-10 country.
Yeah, I just hope they have got some stuff that's going to put them in a good spot early. Like, they need to start faster. Does that necessarily mean go downfield and score on your opening possession? No, it doesn't. That would be great. But how about get a couple first downs so when you punt, you're pinning them inside the 15, and then maybe when you get the ball back after your defense does its job, you're setting up shop in midfield, and it's just been such a struggle. So maybe he has to take some stuff on the call sheet that normally you're holding back for a little bit later in the game, and you're getting that going early, stuff you feel highly confident in, that the players feel confident in, to get a little momentum and production early in the football game.
Which quarterback do you think has a bigger impact on Sunday's game, Kyler Murray or Caleb Williams?
Well, I think Caleb's got a chance. Like, just look at the Arizona defense. Like, dead last in the league is on third down. They're giving up. Opponents are connecting on more than 52% of third downs. They're not good against the pass, guys. The Arizona Cardinals, bottom eight, maybe 26th in the league against the pass. 26th in the league against the run. The sacks per pass attempt, they're 27th in the league. So I'm just, you go across the board, some of these statistics, and there's nothing for the Bears to fear. But again, what's your level of belief in the offensive line situation? And then can the Bears slay the dragon? Which is a road trip, right? That's what that's become for them.
Thank you, Brad. Appreciate it, buddy.
Safe travels, Brad.
Yeah, have a good trip.
Have a great weekend, guys.
That's our guy, Brad Biggs, the football man from the Chicago Tribune. You're listening to Mully and Haw on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Mornings with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. It's fascinating, really, thinking about this game and the meaning of this game and how valuable it could be to the season. Because we know what's out there. We know that the teams that they eventually are going to play are significantly better than the teams they've been playing. And if they don't get their act together, and I mean like yesterday, this is going to blow up on them pretty quickly.
Yeah, you get the sense that the rest of the season and how relevant the Bears become will be determined on Sunday afternoon in Glendale. It's that big. And they made it that big. And they are in a position they put themselves in. You squandered a victory in Washington against the Commanders. And now you're in a position where you are desperate. And they've had a difficult week of enduring reminders of how they let one get away and all the things they did wrong. Maybe they're upset about that. Maybe they're unraveling. But whatever the case is, they've got an opportunity here that to change their season and to redirect things in the right direction. Because right now, you can make the argument, in the NFL, every week is a season. And right now, the arrow was not pointing up at Hallis Hall. And if they lose on Sunday, it will not be pointing in the right direction. And there will be consequences for that two-game losing streak that they have created for themselves. So that's how big this weekend is.
And I wonder internally if they feel like they're handling this week well. I wonder if they, because to me, again, from the outside looking in, it feels like they're not handling this week very well. It feels like the same storylines that we were dealing with on Monday, we're dealing with on Friday.
Well, that's up to us. I mean, we could change the subject. But I
disagree. I think that the very fact that they're not changing the subject, the very fact that the offensive coordinator is doubling down on stuff that seems nonsensical, that's going to create more conversation.
Well, no, but the counter to what you're saying is that people will say it's up to us. I don't agree with that because I think that the Bears are, regardless of what Brad says about it being, you know, standard policy around the league to have your coordinator speak on Thursday, to me, on a week like this, it underscores just why that has to change, or that can't be the case. We are on Friday morning relitigating that play and the logic behind it, or the lack of logic behind it, because Shane Waldron finally addressed it 4 days later. That's absurd.
But he didn't just address it. He doubled down.
Well,
on
that's
it.
Even more absurd.
It remains
a topic, and it remains an issue that's hard to get past because the Bears may have moved on internally, but outside of Hallis Hall, we've been unable to, because finally the accountability that everybody is pining for, we got some, and the lack of it is astounding. So we're still talking about it because they made us notice it again and think about it like, oh my gosh, you mean they didn't think it was a bad idea? Oh my gosh, he would do it again? How foolish. So that's where we are. The Bears, this has been a bad week for credibility at Hallis Hall, in a building that had started to restore some. The Hard Knocks bounce was real in the offseason during training camp. You went into the year feeling pretty good about things. You don't now. You shouldn't.
Yeah, I think there was a Hard Knock bounce, but it wasn't real. It was just a made-for-TV moment that the team helped control, and then you get into the reality of the season, and some of the same concerns and issues from the last year are back again. And, you know, there's something about the Bears. There's something about a team that preaches all of their great culture to the point where when they have to fire coaches, they try to use it as an example of their great culture. Like that's the goofiest way of spinning something I've ever seen. But, oh, there, that's as you're held accountable. And now you come into this week, and first the coach is very reluctant for 2 days to be accountable. Then he talks about accountability, and we're going to find out if they're accountable come Sunday. Well, but then by the time the offensive coordinator is up there, as we said, it's like the boy in the bubble showed up, and he's just like, oh, I do. It was bizarre.
Yeah, Shane Waldron seemed pretty myopic yesterday. And I think the thing about it is that for us to have these broader conversations and to give credit for, you know, football culture and the things that we tend to talk about and they tend to bring up, accountability and all of the buzzwords and coach speak, frankly, I think to be able to have that conversation and count that as an asset for your organization, you've got to do the football stuff right. I mean, it comes down to blocking and tackling and executing and using logic and taking the gimmies and doing things that make good football teams better and also make good football coaches gain credibility within their locker room and then within their football city. And what we saw on Sunday was the loss of that credibility, which goes a long way. You know, you find ways. And I thought of this last night watching the Thursday night game and wondering why in the world did C.J. Stroud go in motion for the Texans and run a pass route into the end zone. And they had, I think, Joe Mixon throwing to him. Why?
Yeah.
I think we tend to like...
They were out of receivers?
It was just an example. Maybe that's part of it. Now, you're not comparing to the Texans to the Bears necessarily, but it reminded me to think like, okay, when you are a team like the Bears and you're trying to reverse everything, you're in year three of a regime, you can't afford to get cute the way the Bears have gotten cute. And you've got to do the football part right before we buy into this broader idea of what the HITS principle is supposed to stand for and accountability and all these topics that the organization wants to lean into.
I got to tell you, like, if you really want to think about the entire season, throw the challenge flag at the right moment. Don't throw the challenge flag and have a call overturned. Don't keep burning timeouts throwing it. But then you get into a game last week, and we haven't talked about this at all. That Zach Ertz catch, that was not a catch. He looked around for the official to see if they were measuring it, and then they sped up. Why aren't you throwing a challenge flag there? I know that's nothing, but I think, you know, hashtag real coach, hashtag accountability. That comes into play, David.
It does. I mean, it does. I don't – and those are things that, you know, when you are – not doing the other things. This is kind of my point. Like that's a valid criticism, and that's a valid point of contention, and that's a valid topic. But before you get to that point, I think that the other stuff is much more troubling to me.
Oh yeah, I agree.
The other stuff is like, okay, you know, you've got to prove that you are a football team that can do the basic things better. And the Bears defense has been that unit. And then they lost our confidence because they, you know, got a little cocky. And that's what happens when you have success. Tyreek Stevenson didn't know how to handle it, so he didn't do the little things. Offensively, you know, I want to see a better football team before we have those broader conversations.
Yes.
But it's impossible because the Bears are just the Bears. This is so on brand for them because we started to get in the bye week, had an extra week to celebrate things, to look in the right direction, the way things were headed. And they do that, and it feels all too familiar.
All right, we got Joe Fortenbaugh. Joe's going to join us next. We'll talk to our buddy from Vegas, even though he's not in Vegas. It's a very complicated story. We'll talk to Joe next. Mully and Haw on the Score. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Joe Fortenbaugh, a long way removed from Vegas, a couple stops removed. And nonetheless, he is our man in Vegas. He's got all the contacts, he's got all the information, and he joins us as all guests do on the Aturo Hotline, your all weather tire, Aturo.com. Joseph, how are you, buddy?
Looking dapper, Joe.
Thank you, gentlemen. The media nerd in me wants to ask this question, and it's not to open up any wounds. I'm just curious, in all the years you've been doing radio, where did Monday's show rank versus everything else? Because I would imagine, I can only shudder to think.
You know, I hate to say this, but it was good for business in terms of, I believe, you know, we get on here at 5:30 in the morning.
It was good for business.
We had full phone lines.
Oh my gosh.
At 5:30 a.m.
It was similar to the double doink day after.
Yeah, yeah.
It was,
okay, that's a good comparison.
Yeah, only Tyreek Stevenson didn't go on the Today Show.
That's the only difference.
That was it.
Yeah. And he's still on the team.
That was so wild back then. That's a great reference point because obviously I remember that happening. I was living in San Francisco, and I'm just watching – I'm thinking to myself, when they're trying to hand the ball off to the O-lineman, I'm thinking, this is just a disaster. This is Sports Talk Radio gold. And then the Bears come back and get the lead, and then it ends the way it does, and the Stevenson thing isn't really known right away. You just lose on a Hail Mary, and then the video comes out.
God.
And I'm thinking, you guys could do 24 hours straight. You wouldn't even need a commercial break. So, just curious. It's not to open up any old wounds.
No, no.
Obviously, I root for some teams that go through that as well.
Like I tell you, Joe, you know, the other element is the Bears are keeping this story alive. Like yesterday, the offensive coordinator comes out and says that he'd run that play again, the fumble on the goal line. What? He was maniacal.
That was exactly what the Niners did after the Super Bowl when they won the toss in overtime and took the ball. And it was very clear they didn't know the overtime rules. They weren't prepared for them. Shanahan tried to say afterwards, we wanted the ball third. That's what the analytics said, which is wrong because the analytics say if you score a touchdown and then Kansas City comes down and scores a touchdown, they're going for two. So you're not going to have an opportunity to get the ball third. And the Niners did everything they could to keep that story alive for the whole week. At some point, you're thinking to yourself, like, you got to just shut up and end this thing. Just go on vacation, for crying out loud.
All right, Joe, we got to move on because we have college football to talk about. What say you about this week's college football slate?
We'll start with the big one. I do like Penn State plus the points. It's got to be three or better. I like under 47 as well. Everyone's going to talk about James Franklin in big games, 1-12 against teams in the top five in his career at Penn State. Fine. He's also 7-3 against the spread against Ohio State. So we can counterpunch that right there. It all comes down to Ohio State's offensive line. Very banged up. Looked terrible against Nebraska. Couldn't run the ball. On the road, crowd noise, all that stuff. Jim Knowles, defensive coordinator at Ohio State, he'll have something for Penn State. So I see a low-scoring game, but ultimately I'll want the points in my pocket with Penn State. We'll lay 7.5 with SMU over Pitt. Pitt's undefeated. People are going to say, how could you possibly lay the 7.5? SMU just won a game last week against Duke by 1 point where they were -6 in turnover differential. I've never seen such a thing. -6 in turnover differential. You commit 6 turnovers to their 0 and you still win. They're a little undervalued. Pitt had 3 pick sixes against Syracuse. They're a little overvalued. We'll play SMU. Mm. We'll also go ahead and make 2 bets on the South Carolina game. South Carolina +3 over Texas A&M. We're also going under the total, which is around 44 points. Big flat spot for A&M here. Huge win against LSU. Now you're on the road. Night game in Columbia. Place is going to be rocking. Gamecocks have a really good defense. On top of that, Texas A&M offensively, that quarterback, he's not going to catch anyone by surprise like he did last week. South Carolina will be prepped for him. So I'd take the 3 there. I'd also play under the 44. And then a little bit on Florida, +14.5 against Georgia. Could get blown out of the water here. Georgia's been very inconsistent this season. Gators getting better as the year goes on. Can play a little defense here. I think they can keep it within 14.5. Last one, Louisville +10 over Clemson. Clemson's been beaten up on nobodies. Louisville can actually play. So I think Clemson's a little overvalued. So we're going to go with Florida +14.5, Louisville +10, SMU -7.5, South Carolina +3. We also like the under 44 there. Penn State +3. We also like the under 47 there. I'd play Auburn as well against Vanderbilt. Mm. This is the week it all falls apart for Vanderbilt. They're good when they're a really big dog. This week, they're not a big dog. It's right around a touchdown. Auburn's better than the record indicates.
This segment with Joe Fortenbaugh, sponsored by the Illinois Department of Transportation. It's not a game, Illinois.com. What about
nothing
the
says Joe Fortenbaugh like the Illinois Department of Transportation.
It screams it.
That's Joe Fortenbaugh. When you're taking the Illinois Transportation, you think Joe Fortenbaugh, Chicago.
Absolutely, Joe.
No one keeps the morning moving better than Joe. That's what they're saying. Yeah. That's why they want to be a part of it.
We're all in this together. And like I said, every time I've been in Chicago, it's like 9 times in my life. A, I've always had a good time. B, I've never had any transportation issues.
All right, let's keep it moving then, Joe. NFL schedule.
All right, I'm going to start with my favorite bet of the weekend. We've been talking about this. It's 7-1 this year. Carolina stinks defensively in the first half. They actually stink everywhere. But the best bet with them is to play their opponent first half team total over. So what does that mean? The opponent is New Orleans this week. In the first half, New Orleans team total is 13.5 points. That means we can bet over or under 13.5 points. We're going to bet over that. Those bets are 7-1 this season against Carolina. They're giving up 22 points per game in the first half. It's like historically bad. The next worst is 15 points per game. Derek Carr should be back for the Saints. Over 13.5 points in the first half for the Saints. I like the Packers. I think the Lions are on upset alert. If you look at the Jared Goff indoor-outdoor splits for his career, very dramatic. More INTs, completion percentage drops off, QB rating drops off. First outdoor game of the year for the Lions. It's in November. They only have 3 outdoor games all season long. I like the Packers in the spot. I take the points. I like the over 51.5 Dallas-Atlanta. Neither team can generate pressure. Both should be able to throw the ball all over the field in this game. That totals 51.5. Baltimore in the first half against Denver. 5.5 is the spread. Baltimore off a loss. They're going to be out gangbusters in this game. Denver a little overrated. They've been beating up on a bunch of nobodies. Bo Nix has been stacking stats against either bad teams or in garbage time. This is where it all comes crashing down for Denver. So I'd go ahead and play that. And then under 42, Cleveland and the Chargers. I know everyone's very excited about Famous Jameis. He was very good in game one. There were some turnover-worthy throws there that didn't end up getting picked off. That's not going to be the case against this Charger defense this week. So to recap, Saints first half team total, over 13.5. Packers plus the 2.5. Ravens in the first half, minus 5.5. Over 51.5, Dallas and Atlanta. Under 42, Cleveland and the Chargers.
Do you have any opinion on the Bears other than they lost a really horrible fashion last week?
It's like, what do you do here, right? Like, yeah. You really have to hit. I think that the Commanders are overvalued at 4 against the Giants coming off that win against the Bears. But that's, I mean, I'm not taking the Giants. Every time there's a good spot for the Giants, they screw it up. Too many penalties. So that's just to stay away. For the Bears this week, you got to ask yourself, how quickly can you rebound? Do you believe this is a resilient team, or do you believe this team will still be affected by that? Because the market's telling you they think the Bears are still kind of what we saw at the end of that game. I'd be more inclined to look at the Bears here. I like to go the opposite of what we just saw, right? I like to bet against guys that just had a career game. I like to bet on guys who just struggled in games. Bears just struggled. Market understands that. I'd be looking at the Bears this weekend. Famous last words.
You're the best, Joe. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Joe. Great stuff.
Gentlemen, thank you for having me. Love you, Chicago. Enjoy your transportation in the state of Illinois. Joe Fornball endorses it. Go Bears. I'll catch you next week.
That is so great. And I should tell you, this segment with Joe, also brought to you by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. For all the right reasons, call 866-4-SEASONS.
I am curious.
I didn't want to say that to him because I thought it would come back.
It would come back. Yeah, definitely. He would definitely have something to say. I think it's interesting to me how many different views of this game there are in terms of the way I sort of posed it.
Yes.
Boy, the Bears are suffering from a lack of credibility.
Yes.
I've lost a lot of confidence in them. And then you counter with a very valid point as well. They're desperate. You go into the desert and they show how desperate they are by winning this football game. What do people think? When you hear Shane Waldron speak yesterday, did that make people lose confidence even more or revisit that play again and again or relitigate it, as Brad said? 312-644-6767. Are people expecting the Bears to win this game?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I think the other thing to remember is the look-ahead line. Before the Bears had that meltdown, they were going to be favored in this game.
Yes.
And the minute they had that meltdown, the reaction
from the public was
to reverse that. And the Bears now, it's closed down to almost a pick 'em, or they're minus one, depending on where you go, which is very interesting to me because they were a 1.5-point favorite in the look-ahead line.
Mm.
Anyway. Give us a call, 312-644-6767. We'll get to the phone lines. Mully and Haw on the score.